Secondly, excitation to duty, weaning one from this world and prompting him to look after the happiness of the other world. Many have been beholden to the crook in their lot, for that ever they came to themselves, settled and turned serious, going for a time like a wild ass used to the wilderness, scorning to be turned. Their foot has slid in due time, and a crook being by that means made in their lot, their mouth has come wherein they have been caught. Thus was the prodigal brought to himself and obliged to entertain thoughts of returning to his father. The crook in their lot convinces them at length that their rest is not here, finding still a pricking thorn of uneasiness whenever they lay down their head, where they would fain take rest in the creature, and that they are obliged to lift again. They are brought to conclude that there is no hope from that quarter, and begin to cast about for rest another way, so it makes them errands to God, which they did not before. For as much as they feel a need of the comforts of the other world to which their mouths were made out to taste, while their lot stood even to their mind. Wherefore, whatever use we make of the crook in our lot, the voice of it is, arise and depart, this is not your rest. And it is surely that which of all means of mortification of the afflictive king, most deadens a real Christian to this life and world. Thirdly, conviction of sin. As when one walking heedlessly is suddenly taken ill of a lameness, his going halting the rest of his way convinces him of having made a wrong step, and every new painful step brings it afresh to his mind, so God makes a crook in one's lot to convince him of some false step he has made or course he has taken. What the sinner would otherwise be apt to overlook, forget, or think light of is by this means recalled to mind, set before him as an evil and bitter thing and kept in remembrance, that his heart may ever now and then bleed for it afresh. Thus by the crook, men's sins find them out to their conviction, as the thief is ashamed when he is found. The which Joseph's brothers feelingly express under the crook made in their lot in Egypt, we are verily guilty concerning our brother. God has found out the iniquity of your servants. The crook in the lot usually, in its nature circumstances, so naturally refers to the false step or course that it serves for a providential memorial of it, bringing the sin, though of an old date, fresh to remembrance, and for a badge of the sinner's folly in word or deed, to keep it ever before him. When Jacob found Leah, through Laban's unfair dealing, palmed on him for Rachel, how could he miss of a stinging remembrance of the cheat he had 7 years at least before put on his own father, pretending himself to be Esau? How could it miss of galling him occasionally afterwards during the course of his marriage? He had imposed on his father the younger brother for the elder, and Laban imposed upon him the elder for the younger. The dimness of Isaac's eyes favored the former cheat, and the darkness of the evening did as much favor the latter. So he behooved to say, as Adonibezek in another case, as I have done, so God hath requited me. In like manner, Rachel, dying in childbirth, could hardly avoid a melancholy reflection of her rash and passionate expression, give me children, or else I die. Even holy Job read in the crook of his lot some false steps he had made in his youth many years before. You write bitter things against me and make me possess the iniquities of my youth. Fourthly, correction or punishment for sin. In nothing more than in the crook of a lot is that word verified. Your own wickedness shall correct you and your backsliding shall reprove you. God may for a time wink at one's sins, which afterward he will set a brand of his indignation upon, in crooking the sinner's lot, as he did in the case of Jacob and of Rachel mentioned before. Though the sin was a passing action, or a course of it, no long continuance, the mark of the divine displeasure for it set on the sinner in the crook of his lot may pain him long and sore, that by repeated experience he may know what an evil and bitter thing it was. David's killing Uriah by the sword of the Ammonites was soon over, but for that cause the sword never departed from his house. Gehazi quickly obtained 2 bags of money from Naaman. in the way of falsehood and lying, but as a lasting mark of divine indignation against the profane trick he got with all the leprosy which craved to him while he lived and to his posterity after him. This may be the case as well where the sin is pardoned as to the guilt of eternal wrath as where it is not. And one may have confessed and sincerely repented of that sin which yet shall make him go halting to the grave, though it cannot carry him to hell. A man's person may be accepted in the beloved, who has yet a particular badge of the divine displeasure, with his sin hung on him in the crook of his lot. You were a God that forgave them, though you took vengeance on their inventions. Fifthly, preventing of sin. I will hedge up your way with thorns and make a wall that she shall not find her paths. The crook in the lot will readily be found to lie cross to some wrong bias of the heart, which peculiarly sways with the party. So it is like a thorn hedge or wall in the way which the bias inclines him to. The defiling objects in the world specially take and prove ensnaring, as they are suited to the particular cast of temper in men. But by means of the crook in the lot, the paint and the varnish is worn off the defiling object, by which it loses its former taking appearance. Thus the edge of corrupt affections is blunted, temptation weakened, and much sin prevented. The sinner, after gadding about so much, looks to change his way, resuming ashamed. Thus the Lord crooks one's lot, that he may withdraw man from his purpose and hide pride from men, and so keeps back his soul from the pit. Everyone knows what is most pleasant to him, but God alone knows what is most profitable. As all men are liars, so all men are fools too. He is the only wise God. Many are obliged to the crook in their lot, that they do not go to those excesses which their vain minds and corrupt affections would carry them full sail. And they would from their hearts bless God for making it, if they did but calmly consider what would most likely be the issue of the removal of it. When one is in hazarding or fretting under the hardship of bearing the crook, he would do well to consider what condition he is in as yet to bear its removal in a Christian manner. Sixthly, discovery of latent corruption, whether in saints or sinners. There are some corruptions in every man's heart which lie, as it were, so near the surface that they are ready on every turn to rise up. But then there are others also which lie so very deep they are scarcely observed at all. But as the fire under the pot makes the scum rise up, appear on top and run over, so the crook in the lot raises up from the bottom and brings out such corruption as otherwise one could hardly imagine to be within. Who would have suspected such strength of passion in the meek Moses as he discovered at the waters of strife, for which he was kept out of Canaan? Or so much bitterness of spirit in the patient Job as to charge God with becoming cruel to him? So much ill nature in the good Jeremiah as to curse not only the day of his birth, but even the man who brought tidings of it to his father? Or such a tang of atheism in Asaph as to pronounce religion a vain thing? But the crook in the lot, bringing out these things, showed them to have been within, how long soever they had lurked unobserved. And as this design, however indecently proud scoffers allow themselves to treat it, is in no way inconsistent with the divine perfections, so the discovery itself is necessary for the due humiliation of sinners, and to stain the pride of all glory, that men may know themselves, both which appear in that it was on this very design that God made the long-continued crook in Israel's lot in the wilderness, even to humble them and prove them to know what was in their heart. Seventhly, the exercise of grace in the children of God. Believers, through the remains of indwelling corruption, are liable to fits of spiritual laziness and inactivity in which their grace lies dormant for the time. Besides, there are some graces which of their own nature are but occasional in their exercise, as being exercised only upon occasion of certain things which they have a necessary relation to, such as patience and long-suffering. Now, the crook and the lot surge to rouse up a Christian to the exercise of the graces, overpowered by corruption, and with all to call forth to action the occasional graces, ministering proper occasions for them. The truth is, the crook and the lot is the great engine of providence for making men appear in their true colors, discovering both their ill and their good. And if the grace of God is in them, it will bring it out and cause it to display itself. It so puts the Christian to his shifts that however it makes him stagger for a while, yet it will at length evidence both the reality and the strength of grace in him. You are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perishes, may be found unto praise. The crook in the lot gives rise to many acts of faith, hope, love, self-denial, resignation, and other graces, to many heavenly breathings, partings, and groanings, which otherwise would not be brought forth. And I make no question but these things, however, by carnal men, despised as trifling, are more precious in the sight of God than even believers themselves are aware of, being acts of immediate internal worship, and will have a surprising notice taken of them and of the sum of them at long run. However it may be, the persons themselves often can hardly think them worth their own notice at all. The steady routing of a gallant army or horse and foot to the routing of the enemy is highly prized, but the acting of holy fear and humble hope is in reality far more valuable, as being so in the sight of God, whose judgment we are sure is according to truth. This the psalmist teaches. He delights not in the strength of the horse. He takes not pleasure in the legs of a man. The Lord takes pleasure in them that fear him, in those that hope in his mercy. And indeed, the exercise of the graces of his Spirit in his people is so very precious in his sight that whatever grace any of them excel in, they will readily get such a crook made in their lot as will be a special trial of it and will make a proof of its full strength. Abraham excelled in the grace of faith, entrusting God's bare word of promise above the dictates of sense, and God, giving him a promise that he would make of him a great nation, made withal a crook in his lot, by which he had enough ado with all the strength of his faith, while he was obliged to leave his country and kindred and sojourn among the Canaanites, his wife continuing barren till past the age of childbearing, and when she had at length brought forth Isaac, and he was grown up, he was called to offer him up for a burnt offering. The more exquisite trial of his faith, that Ishmael was now expelled his family, and that it was declared that in Isaac only his seed should be called. Moses was very meek above all the men which were on the face of the earth, and he was entrusted with the conduct of a most perverse and unmanageable people, the crook in his lot plainly designed for the exercise of his meekness. Job excelled in patience, and by the crook in his lot, he got as much to do with it. For God gives none of his people to excel in a gift, but sometime or another, he will afford them use for the whole compass of it. Now, the use of this doctrine is threefold. One, for reproof. Two, for consolation. And three, for exhortation. Number one, for reproof. And it meets with three sorts of persons as reprovable. First, the carnal and earthly, who do not with awe and reverence regard the crook in their lot as of God's making. There is certainly a signature of the divine hand on it to be perceived by just observers. And that challenges an awful regard, the neglect of which forebodes destruction. Because they do not regard the works of the Lord, nor the operation of his hands, he shall destroy them and not build them up. And in that they are deeply guilty, who, pouring on second causes and looking no further than the unhappy instruments of the crook in their lot, overlook the first cause. As a dog snarls at the stone, but does not look at the hand that casts it. This is, in effect, to make a god of the creature. So regarding it, as if it could of itself affect anything, while in the meantime it is but an instrument in the hand of God, the rod of his anger, ordained of him for judgment, established for correction, Oh, why should men terminate their view on the instruments of the crook in their lot and so magnify their scourges? The truth is, they are for the most part rather to be pitied as having an undesirable office, which, for their gratifying their own corrupt affections in making the crook in the lot of others, returns on their own head at length with a vengeance, as did the blood of Jezreel on the house of Jehu. And it is specially undesirable, to be so employed in the case of such as belong to God. For rarely is the ground of the quarrel the same on the part of the instrument as on God's part, but very different. Witness Shimei's cursing David as a bloody man, meaning the blood of the house of Saul, which he was not guilty of, while God meant it of the blood of Uriah, which he could not deny. Moreover, the quarrel will be at length taken up between God and his people, and then their scourgers will find that they had but a thankless office. I was but a little displeased, and they helped forward the affliction, says God, in resentment of the heathen crooking the lot of his people. In like manner, they are guilty who impute the crook in their lot to fortune or their ill luck, which in very deed is nothing but a creature of imagination framed for a blind to keep man from acknowledging the hand of God. Thus, what the Philistines doubted, they do more impiously determine, saying, in effect, it is not his hand that smote it, it is by chance that happened to us. And finally, those also are guilty who, in the way of giving up themselves to despise the crook in their lot, to make nothing of it and to forget it, I question not. But one committing his case to the Lord and looking to him for remedy in the first place may lawfully call in the moderate use of the comforts of life for help in the second place. But as for that course so frequent and usual in this case among carnal men, if the crook of the lot really is, as indeed it is, of God's making, it must needs be a most indecent, unbecoming course to be abhorred of all good men. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord. It is surely a very desperate method of cure, which cannot miss of issuing in something worse than a disease, however it may palliate it for a while. In that day did the Lord of God of hosts call to weeping and to mourning, and behold, joy and gladness, eating flesh and drinking wine. And it was revealed in my ears by the Lord of hosts, surely this iniquity shall not be purged from you till you die. Secondly, the unsubmissive, whose hearts, like the troubled sea, swell and boil, fret and murmur, and cannot be at rest until the crook in their lot. This is a most sinful and dangerous course, the Apostle Jude, characterizing some to whom is reserved the blackness and darkness forever, says of them, these are murmurers, complainers, namely, still complaining of their lot, which is the import of the word here used by the Holy Ghost. For since the crook in their lot, which their unsubdued spirits can by no means submit to, is of God's making, this their practice must needs be a fighting against God. And these, their complainings and murmurings, are indeed against him, whatever face they put on them. Thus, when the Israelites murmur against Moses, God charges them with murmuring against himself. How long shall I bear with this evil congregation which has murmured against me? Ah! May not he who made and fashioned us without our advice be allowed to make our lot too, without asking our mind? But we must rise up against him on account of the crook made in it? What does this speak? But that the proud creature cannot endure God's work, nor bear what he has done? And how black and dangerous is that temper of spirit? How is it possible to miss of being broken to pieces in such a course? He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who has hardened himself against him and has prospered. Thirdly, the careless and unfruitful, who do not set themselves dutifully to comply with the design of the crook in their lot. God and nature do nothing in vain. Since he makes the crook, there is doubtless a becoming design in it, which we are obliged in duty to fall in with according to that, hear the rod. And indeed, if one did not shut his own eyes, but is willing to understand, he may easily perceive the general design of it to be to wean him from this world, and to move him to seek and take up his heart's rest in God. and nature and the circumstances of the crook itself being duly considered, it will not be very hard to make a more particular discovery of the design of it. But alas, the careless sinner, sunk in spiritual sloth and stupidity, is in no concern to discover the design of providence in the crook. So he cannot fall in with it, but remains unfruitful, and all the pains taken on him by the great husbandman in the dispensation are lost. They cry out by reason of the arm of the mighty, groaning under the pressure of the crook itself, and weight of the hand of the instrument of it. But none said, "What is God my maker?" They look not, they turn not to God. Use number two, for consolation. It speaks comfort to the afflicted children of God. Whatever is the crook in your lot, it is of God's making, and therefore you may look upon it kindly. Since it is of your Father who has made it for you, question not, but there is a favorable design in it towards you. A discreet child welcomes his father's rod, knowing that, being a father, he seeks his benefit in this way, and shall not God's children welcome the crook in their lot, as designed by their Father who cannot mistake his measures to work for their good according to the promise? The truth is, the crook in the lot is of a believer. How painful it proves is a part of the discipline of the covenant, the nurture secured to Christ's children by the promise of the Father. If his children forsake my law and do not walk in my judgments, then I will visit their transgressions with a rod. Furthermore, all who are disposed to betake themselves to God under the crook in their lot may take comfort in this. Let them know that there is no crook in their lot, but that they may be made straight. For God made it, surely then he can mend it. He himself can make straight what he has made crooked, though none other can. There is nothing too hard for him to do. He raises up the poor out of the dust and lifts the needy out of the dunghill, that he may set him with princes. He makes the barren woman to keep house and to be a joyful mother of children. Do not say that your crook has been so long continuance that it will never mend. Put it in the hand of God who made it, that he may mend it, and wait on him. And if it be for your good that it should be mended, it shall be mended. For no good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. Number three, for exhortation. Since the crook in the lot is of God's making, then, eyeing the hand of God in yours, be reconciled to it and submit under it, whatever it is. I say, eyeing the hand of God in it, for otherwise your submission under the crook in your lot cannot be a Christian submission acceptable to God, having no reference to him as your party in the matter. Object number one. But some will say, the crook in my lot is from the hand of the creature, such as a one, too, as I deserted no such treatment from. Answer. From what has already been said, it appears that although the crook in your lot is indeed immediately from the creature's hand, yet it is immediately from the hand of God, being nothing of that kind, no penal evil, but the Lord has done it. Therefore, without all peradventure, God himself is the principal party, whoever is the less principal, and although you have not deserved your crook at the hand of the instrument which he makes use of your correction, you certainly deserve it at his hand. And he may make use of what instrument he will in this matter, or may do it immediately by himself, even as it seems good in his sight. Objection 2. But the crook in my lot might quickly be evened if the instrument or instruments of it pleased, only there is no dealing with them so as to convince them of their fault in making it. Answer. If it be so, be sure God's time is not yet come that the clock should be made even. For if it were come, though they would stand now like an impregnable fort, they would give way like a sandy bank under one's foot. They would bow down to you with their face towards the earth and lick up the dust from your feet. Meanwhile, that state of the matter is so far from justifying one's not eyeing the hand of God in the crook in the lot that it makes a peace trial in which his hand very eminently appears, namely, that men should be singly injurious and burdensome to others, yet by no means susceptible of conviction. This was the trial of the church from her adversaries. All that found them have devoured them, and their adversaries said, "We do not offend, because they have sinned against the Lord, the habitation of justice." They were very abusive and gave her barbarous usage, yet would they own no fault in the matter? How could they ward off the conviction? Were they verily blameless in their devouring the Lord's straying sheep? No, surely they were not. Did they look on themselves as ministers of the divine justice against her? No, they did not. Some indeed would make a question here how the adversaries of the church could celebrate her God as the habitation of justice. With the original pointing of the text being retained, it appears that there is no ground at all for this question here, and with all the whole matter is set in a clear light, that all that found them have devoured them, and their adversaries said, "We do not offend, because they have sinned against the Lord, the habitation of justice." These last are not the words of the adversaries, but the words of the prophet, showing how it came to pass that the adversaries devoured the Lord's sheep as they lighted on them, and withal stood to the defense of it when they had done it, far from acknowledging any wrong. The matter lay here. The sheep had sinned against the Lord, the habitation of justice, and as a just punishment of this from his hand, they could have no justice at the hand of their adversaries. Wherefore, laying aside these frivolous pretenses and eyeing the hand of God, as that which has bound their lot in that part and keeps it in the bow, be reconciled to, and submit unto the crook, whatever it is saying from the heart, truly, this is a grief, and I must bear it. And to move you to this, consider. 1, it is a duty you owe to God as your sovereign Lord and benefactor. His sovereignty challenges our submission, and it can in no case be meanness of spirit to submit to the crook which his hand has made in our lot, and to go quietly under the yoke that he has laid on. But it is really madness for the potsherds of the earth, by their turbulent and refractory carriages under it, to strive with their Maker. And his beneficence to us ill-deserving creatures may well stop our mouth from complaining of his making a crook in our lot, who would have done us no wrong had he made the whole of it crooked. Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall not receive evil? 2, it is an unalterable statute for the time of this life that nobody shall want a crook in their lot. For man is born into trouble as the sparks fly upward. And those who are designed for heaven are in a special manner assured of a crook in theirs, that in this world they shall have tribulation. For by means of it the Lord makes them suitable for heaven. And how can you imagine that you shall be exempted from the common lot of mankind? Shall the rocks be removed out of his place for you? And since God makes the crooks in men's lots according to the different exigency of their cases, you may be sure that yours is necessary for you. 3, a crook in the lot, which one can by no means submit to, makes a condition of all things the likest to that in hell. For there a yoke, which the wretched suffers can neither bear nor shake off, is wreathed about their necks. There the Almighty arm draws against them, and they against it. There they are ever suffering and ever sinning, still in the furnace, but their dross is not consumed, nor they purified. Even such is the case of those who now cannot submit to the crook in their lot. 4, great is the loss by not submitting to it. The crook in the lot, rightly improved, has turned to the best account and made the best time to some that ever they had all their life long. As the psalmist from his own experience testifies, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I have kept your word." There are many now in heaven who are blessing God for the crook they had in their lot here. What a sad thing it must be, then, to lose his teeth when for Emmanuel's land. But if the crook in your lot does you no good, be sure it will not miss doing you great damage. It will greatly increase your guilt and aggravate your condemnation, while it shall forever cut you to the heart to think of the pains taken by means of the crook in the lot to wean you from the world and to bring you to God, but all in vain. Take heed, therefore, how you manage it, lest you mourn at the last day, "How I have hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof." 2, what God sees suitable to mar, we shall not be able to mend in our lot. What crook God makes in our lot, how shall we not be able to even? We shall, 1, show God's marring in making a crook in one's lot as he sees fitting. 2, we shall consider men's attempting to mend or even that crook in their lot. 3. In what sense it is to be understood that we shall not be able to mend or even the crook in our lot. 4. Render some reasons of the point. First, as the first head, namely, to show God's marring and making a crook in one's lot, as he sees fitting. First, God keeps the choice of everyone's crook to himself, and therein he exerts his sovereignty. It is not left to our option what that crook shall be, or what our peculiar burden, but as the potter makes of the same clay one vessel for one use, and another for another use, so God makes one crook for one, another for another, according to his own will and pleasure. Whatever the Lord pleased, that he did in heaven and in earth. Secondly, he sees and observes the bias of everyone's will and inclination, how it lies, and where it especially bends away from himself, and consequently where it needs the special bow. So, he did in man's case, one thing you lack, go your way, sell whatever you have, and give to the poor. Observe the bent of his heart to his great possession. He takes notice. What is that idol that in everyone's case he is most apt to be his rival, so that he may suit the trial to the case, making the crook there? Thirdly, by the conduct of his providence or a touch of his hand, he gives that part of one's lot about to the contrary way, so that henceforth it lies quite contrary to the bias of the party's will. And here is the trial made. The bent of the will lying one way, and that part of another's lot another, that it does not answer the inclination of the party, but thwarts it. Fourthly, he wills that crook in the lot to remain while he sees fitting for a longer or shorter time, just according to the holy end he designs for it. By that will, it is so fixed that the whole creation cannot alter it or put it out of the bow. 2, we shall consider men's attempting to mend or even that crook in their lot. This, in a word, lies in their making efforts to bring their lot to a point, in their own will that they may both go one way. So it imports 3 things. First, a certain uneasiness under the crook in the lot. It is a yoke which is hard for the party to bear till his spirit is tamed and subdued. You have chastised me, and I was chastised as a bullock, unaccustomed to the yoke. Turn me, and I shall be turned. And it is for the breaking down of the weight of one's spirit that God lays on it, for which cause it is declared to be a good thing to bear it, that being the way to make one at length as a weaned child. Secondly, a strong desire to have the cross removed and to have matters in that part going according to our inclination. This is very natural. Nature desiring to be free from everything that is burdensome and cross to it. And if that desire is kept in a due subordination to the will of God, it is not too preemptory. It is not sinful. If it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will. Hence, so many accepted prayers of the people of God for the removal of a crook in their lot. Thirdly, an earnest use of means for that end. This naturally follows on that desire. The man being pressed with the cross, which is his crook, labors all he can in the use of means to be rid of it. And if the means used are lawful and not relied on, but followed with an eye to God in them, the attempt is not sinful, whether he succeed in the use of them or not. 3. In what sense it is to be understood that we shall not be able to mend or even the crook in our lot? It is not to be understood as if the case were absolutely hopeless and that there is no remedy for the crook in our lot. For there is no case so desperate but God may right it. Is anything too hard for the Lord? When the crook has continued long and spurned all remedies one has use for it, one is ready to lose all hope about it, but many a crook given over for hopelessness that would never mend, God has made perfectly straight, as in Job's case. But we shall never be able to mend it ourselves, for if the Lord himself does not take it in hand to remove it, it will stand before us immovable, like a mountain of brass, though perhaps it may be in itself a thing that might easily be removed. We take it up in these 3 things. 1, it will never do by the mere force of our hand, for by strength shall no man prevail. The most vigorous endeavors we can use will not even the crook, if God give it not a touch of his hand, so that All endeavors that way without an eye to God are vain and fruitless and will be but plowing on the rock. Number two, the use of all allowable means, for it will be successless unless the Lord blesses them for that end. Who is he that says, and it comes to pass, when the Lord does not command it? And one may eat and not be satisfied, so one may use means proper for evening the crook in his lot and yet prevail nothing. For nothing can be or do for us any more than God makes it to be or do. The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor torches to men of understanding. It will never do in our time, but in God's time, which seldom is so early as ours. My time is not yet come, but your time is always ready. Hence that crook remains sometimes immovable, as if it were kept by an invisible hand, and at another time it goes away with a touch, because God's time is come for evening it. Number four, now we shall assign the reasons of the point. First, because of the absolute dependence we have on God, as the light depends on the sun or the shadow on the body, so we depend on God, and without him can do nothing, great or small. And God will have us to find it so, to teach us our dependence. Secondly, because his will is irresistible, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. When God wills one thing, and the creature the contrary, it is easy to see which will must be done. When the omnipotent arm holds, in vain does the creature draw. Who has hardened himself against him and prospered? Inference one. There is a necessity of yielding and submitting to the crook in our lot. For we may well think to remove the rocks and mountains which God has settled, as to make that part of our lot straight which he has made crooked. Two, but the evening of the crook in our lot, by main force of our own, is but a cheat we put on ourselves, and will not last. But like a stick by main force made straight, it will quickly return to the bow again. The only effectual way of getting the crook evened is to apply to God for it. Exhortation number one. Let us then apply to God for removing any crook in our lot, that in the settled order of things may be removed. Men cannot cease to desire the removal of a crook more than that of a thorn in the flesh. But since we are not able to mend what God sees fitting to mar, it is evident we are to apply to him that made it to amend it, and not take the evening of it in our own hand. Motive one. All our attempts for its removal will, without him, be vain and fruitless. Let us be as resolute as we will have it, even if God say it not, we will labor in vain. However fair the means we use bid for it, they will be ineffectual if he does not command the blessing. Such attempts will generally make it worse. Nothing is more ordinary than for a proud spirit striving with a crook to make it more crooked. Whoso breaks a hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Whoso removes stones shall be hurt with him. This is evident in the case of the murmurers in the wilderness. It naturally comes to be so, because at the rate, the will of the party bends further away from it. Moreover, God is provoked to wrath, to reef the yoke faster about one's neck, that he will by no means let it sit easy on him. Number three, there is no crook, but what may be remedied by him, and made perfectly straight. The Lord raises them that are bowed down. He can perform that concerning which there remains no hope with us, who quickens the dead and calls those things which are not as though they were. It is his prerogative to do wonders, to begin a work where the whole creation gives it over as hopeless and carried on to perfection. He loves to be employed, number four, in evening crooks, and calls us to employ him that way. Call on him in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you. He makes them for that very end, that he may bring us to him on that errand and may manifest his power and goodness in evening of them. The straits of the children of men afford a large field for displaying his glorious perfections, which otherwise would be wanting. Number five, a crook thus evened is a doubled mercy. There are some crooks, even by a touch of the hand of common providence, while people are either not exercised about them or when they fret for their removal. These are sapless mercies and short-lived fruits, thus too hastily plucked off the tree of providence, can hardly miss to set the teeth on edge, and will certainly be bitter to the gracious soul. But oh, the sweets of the evening by the crook of a humble application to and waiting on the Lord. It has the image and superscription of divine favor in it, which makes it bulky and valuable. For therefore, I have seen your face as though I had seen the face of God. Number 6, God has signalized his favor to his dearest children in making and mending notable crooks in their lot. His darling makes ordinarily have the greatest crooks made in their lot. But then they may make way for their richest experiences in the removal of them on their application to him. This is clear in the case of Abraham, Jacob, and Joseph. Which of the patriarchs had so great crooks as they? But which of them, on the other hand, had such single tokens of divine favor? The greatest of men is Samson, and the Baptist have been born of women, naturally barren, so the greatest crooks issue in the richest mercies to them that are exercised by that means. Number 7. It is the shortest and surest way to go straight with God in the crook of a lot. If we would have our wish in that point, we must, as the eagle, first soar aloft and then come down on the prey. Mark 5:36. Our faithless, out of the way attempts to even the crook are but our fool's haste that is no speed. As in the case of Abraham going to Hagar, God is the first mover who sets all the wheels in motion for evening the crook, which without him will remain immovable. Objection number 1. But it is needless, for I see that the crook in the lot may mend, yet it will never mend. In its own nature, it is capable of being removed, but it is plain it is not to be removed. It is hopeless. Answer. That is the language of unbelieving haste, which faith and patience should correct. Abraham had as much to say for the hopelessness of his crook, and yet he applies to God in faith for the meaning of it, mending of it. Sarah had made such a conclusion for which she was rebuked. Nothing can make it needless in such a case to apply to God. Objection number 2. But I have applied to him again and again for it, yet it is never mended. Answer. Delays are not denials of suits at the court of heaven, but trials of the faith and patience of the petitioners. And whose will persevere will certainly speed at length. And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Sometime, indeed, folk grow pettish in the case of the crook of their lot, and let it drop out of their prayers in a course of despondency, while yet it continues uneasy to them. But if God mind to even it in mercy, he will oblige them to take it in again. I will yet for this be inquired of by the house of Israel to do it for them. If the removal comes while it is dropped, there will be little comfort in it. Though it were never to be removed while we live, that should not cut off our applying to God for the removal. And there are many to be answered till we come to the other world, and there all will be answered at once.
Stillwater's Revival Books is now located at puritandownloads.com. It's your worldwide online Reformation home for the very best in free and discounted classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, MP3s, and videos. For much more information on the Puritans and Reformers, including the best free and discounted classic and contemporary books, MP3s, digital downloads, and videos, please visit Stillwater's Revival Books at puritandownloads.com. Stillwater's Revival Books also publishes the Puritan Hard Drive, the most powerful and practical Christian study tool ever produced. All thanks and glory be to the mercy, grace, and love of the Lord Jesus Christ for this remarkable and wonderful new Christian study tool. The Puritan Hard Drive contains over 12,500 of the best Reformation books, MP3s, and videos ever gathered onto one portable Christian study tool. An extraordinary collection of Puritan, Protestant, Calvinistic, Presbyterian, Covenanter, and Reformed Baptist resources. It's fully upgradable and it's small enough to fit in your pocket. The Puritan Hard Drive combines an embedded database containing many millions of records with the most amazing and extraordinary custom Christian search and research software ever created. The Puritan Hard Drive has been produced to assist you in the fascinating and exhilarating spiritual, intellectual, familial, ecclesiastical, and societal adventure that is living the Christian life. It has been specifically designed so that you might more faithfully know, serve, and love the Lord Jesus Christ, as well as to help you to do all you can to bring glory to His great name. If you want to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, then the Puritan Hard Drive is for you. Visit PuritanDownloads.com today for much more information on the Puritan Hard Drive and to take advantage of all the free and discounted Reformation and Puritan books, MP3s, and videos that we offer at Stillwaters Revival Books.